Coming up in this episode...
How did you get talking with her about the creative writing aspect?
Heck, that first page. There should not be anything on that first page that is not going to come back. If a story is over budget, it's too busy and you can't follow it and you don't know what matters. If a story is under budget, it's boring. It's not enough going on.
This podcast from Georgia Public Broadcasting highlights books with Georgia connections, hosted by two of your favorite public radio book nerds who also happen to be your hosts of All Things Considered on GPB. I'm Orlando Montoya.
And I'm Peter Biello. Thanks for joining us as we introduce you to authors, their writings, and the insights behind their stories, mixed with our own thoughts and ideas on just what gives these works the narrative edge. All right, Orlando, we're going to get something of a creative writing workshop on the podcast today.
All right. I hope we're going to get a book, too.
Yeah, we're going to get a book. It's about a book, actually, that is blowing up right now. And because it's blowing up, there's been a lot of coverage about it already. And this is a way to sort of do something a little bit different about the book in question. And today, the book is Kin by Tayara Jones. This book is an Oprah selection, getting a ton of attention. Her previous book, An American Marriage, was also an Oprah selection. You know, as of this podcast dropping, Kin has been out for a month.
So a lot of time to accumulate a lot of coverage.
Yeah, a lot of time to accumulate a lot of coverage. So we want to do something different because some of the writing advice that Tayara Jones and I talked about, I think is really worth talking about on this podcast.
Right. So let's start there. Let's start with the book. What is it about?
Well, the book is about two girls who grow into women over the course of the book, Annie and Niecy, Vernice Niecy. They grow up in the small town of Honeysuckle, Louisiana, as neighbors and so-called cradle friends. They've been friends basically since they were babies. It's a very cute story. Both have lost their mothers for different reasons. Niecy lost her mother to domestic violence early in her life. She has no memory of her mother. And Annie's mother sort of took off when she was a baby. So no memory of her either, but she is alive out there in the world somewhere. So after high school, they go their separate ways. Niecy goes to Spelman. She marries well. She gets a good education. She has stability that Annie does not have. Annie took off west, first to Mississippi and then to Memphis, where she heard that her mother may still be alive and doing something. She's not sure what. Not sure what she'll encounter if she ever meets her mother, but that's what she sets off to do. In the meantime, Annie and Vernice, they do keep in touch. And the story is about their friendship, about the hole in their lives that their mothers have left. It's about race, it's about class, and it's just about kin, essentially, what that means as far as, you know, kin, found family versus blood relations.
Oh, we'll get back to the story in the book later, but how did you get talking with her about the creative writing aspect?
So this is a fascinating little coincidence. So in 2006, I was in an MFA program studying fiction, and I actually took a break from my MFA classes to do an MFA style workshop at this workshop in Point Reyes, California. It was called Tamales Bay Workshop. And I wanted to go because T.C. Boyle was going to be there. He's one of my favorite authors. I got a chance to see him, but I was assigned to Tayara Jones's classes. So took classes with her throughout the course of the week with the same group of students. And really, you know, I was 22. I was eager to learn. So whenever an author of her stature was willing to drop some pearls of wisdom, I was there to collect them. And I was there to sort of turn them over in my mind. And I've been turning them over in my mind ever since.
Well, if it's been 20 years and you've still remembered these pieces of advice, it must be good. So let's take one piece of advice. What's
sure.
The first one?
So the first piece of advice, we'll have a few, but the first piece of advice is that she referred to the first two pages of your novel in progress as valuable real estate, meaning whatever you put on those pages, you know, it's super important to your story. It's going to set the tone. It's going to help your reader focus on what really matters in the story. And so I always thought of those. You know, I've written a few novels since then. They have not been published. I haven't really gotten to the point where I wanted to send them out, but I've always thought about that since then as like, okay, these two pages are valuable real estate. And so when I finally get the chance to talk to her again, never thought I would, but got the chance. I asked her, do you still think about those first two pages as valuable real estate?
Every detail in the first few pages of a novel, the reader thinks is very important and pays really close attention. And it's like you're ringing a bell. And so you have to decide in those first pages how to set the tone for the rest. And many times you'll end up rewriting the first few pages when you're finished the book because you now know what's important in a way you didn't know when you started. but you have to come back and just pack it, pack that first page. There should not be anything on that first page that is not going to come back. Mm-hmm. So when I wrote the first chapter of Ken, Annie wasn't in it. And I had to go back and put her there because this is the story of Niecy and Annie. But when I first started writing it, I thought it was only the story of Niecy. So then once I found out, I had to look at that and say, where would Annie be during this story, during this scene? And I put her in there. I said, come on, Annie, right here.
Well, I mean, that's like writing a news story, you know, in your first two sentences, you want who, what, when, where, why.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this
but
is
I mean, over, you
practical
know,
advice.
Yeah, over 40,000, 50,000 words. New stuff's going to occur to you. You got to go back. And so it made total sense to me. And it was interesting to see that she had to basically reintroduce one of the two main characters because it wasn't really both of their stories at the outset, but it changed over time to be both Niecy and Annie's story. I thought that was fascinating.
It also reminded me of a line from the movie Spaceballs, when they were going through the desert and one of them said to the other, take only what you need to survive.
That's basically it. Take only what you need from those first two pages. Because, I mean, as a reader, right, like we're reading those first two pages and we do, as she said, think it's really important. We're going to carry all of that throughout our understanding of the novel. And if you remember anything that didn't make sense or if you're waiting for something that never comes back, it might just trip you up as a reader. Nothing of the sort happened here in Ken. So she follows her own advice really well. The second piece of advice I remember is a way of thinking about who is in your story. She advised us writers back in 2006 to treat every character in your book as if you have to pay an actor to play that character and you're on a limited budget. So like, do you need this character?
How do you go about that practically?
Well, I mean, you could think about, for example, if you end up creating two characters, but the purpose they serve really could be done with just one. I mean, cut one of those characters, make a composite character. I mean, even creative nonfiction writers will do this as well to the chagrin of nonfiction purists. But yeah, there are composite characters that make it happen. In fiction, it's a lot easier.
Was there examples of that she talked about in this book?
She didn't talk about necessarily having a character that she had to condense, but she surprised me when I put this advice back to her that the concept of a budget, right? You have a budget to pay your cast of characters. The budget applies to all elements of your storytelling. It applies to things like, well, let's let Tayari Jones explain it.
Another thing, every time you change scenery, that costs money. Are you sure this really needs to move? Point of view, the most expensive thing if you switch point of view, that costs more than anything. Only do it if it's entirely necessary. If a story is over budget, it's too busy and you can't follow it and you don't know what matters. If a story is under budget, it's boring. It's not enough going on. Coincidences also cost.
Mm.
Yeah, you got to be careful with those coincidences.
I don't know if I recall any coincidences in Ken that tripped me up.
No, I didn't really have any budget left for any coincidence. That sharecropping whorehouse was expensive.
So I have to explain the sharecropping whorehouse.
What is a sharecropping whorehouse?
Well, it is exactly what it sounds like. But in the story, in Ken, basically Annie, on her way to Memphis, they get this rickety car that kind of dies in Mississippi. And they have to get it repaired. And the only place that they can stay is they're referred to this sharecropping whorehouse run by a woman who says, okay, you can stay here and you can work, not as sex workers, but like, you know, cleaning the place up, being handymen, so forth, until you've sort of earned enough in your ledger to pay our mechanic who will fix the car for you. So they end up staying at this Mississippi sharecropping whorehouse for quite a while. But it makes sense for the plot, in part because there's a ghost at the sharecropping whorehouse.
Well, that sounds like a coincidence. That's going to take out the budget.
She did say like that ghost was expensive too, budget wise. But the ghost was of a mother. So like, it's another way to sort of turn the idea of motherhood on. The mothers are ghosts throughout this book. So to have an actual literal ghost that they find in one of these sharecropping whorehouse shacks, it matters. And then the whole place comes back into the novel later in the novel, which I can't talk about because that would be a spoiler. But she did talk about why that whorehouse was expensive.
It's quirky. So it costs more in terms of when you think about what you're building in a story. The example I like to use about the budget to make it very clear, though fewer people know this reference because I think I'm getting old, but do you remember the movie E.T.?
I have not seen it in decades.
Well, you know, these kids, they have this alien living in the closet. Everything else in that story is very bland. The setting is like in a suburb. The characters are not all that distinct because the alien was so expensive, there was no money left over. You could not have E.T. set like in a war zone because it's too expensive to have an alien and international conflict in the same story. Like, they use all their money on the alien.
It's like if in Franz Kafka's The Metamorphosis, the only thing they had budget for was changing that guy into a cockroach.
That was so expensive.
Everything else is like, you just got to be an ordinary house with an ordinary family.
Yes, because there was no more. There's nothing else. Somebody in the story turns into a roach. That's your whole budget. You can't even have like a sex scene. You spent everything.
So yeah, so if you've ever wondered why there's no sex scene in Franz Kafka's The Metamorphosis, now you know.
I don't want that. I don't even want to think about that. Did she ever offer any like publishing advice? Like, how do you get published? You have this amazing story.
If she did give us publishing advice in that workshop almost 20 years ago, I don't remember it, but she did say something that sort of made us all go, really? Is that really true? And the thing she said was something to the effect of, publishing a book doesn't change your life. And now picture saying that to a room full of 20-something aspiring writers who are like, I want to publish a book. It would make me feel great about myself. It would be an achievement that would be unlike any other I've ever had. Of course it would change my life. But that's what she said. She said it doesn't change your life. And of course, the dividing line here is that we were hearing it from someone who had published a book and was getting paid to be in Tamales Bay, California. And we were all paying to be there. And the dividing line, of course, is she's published, we're not. So we were a little skeptical of that. But I did ask her because things have changed since then. You know, at the time, she'd only published two books. They were well-reviewed. But they didn't blow up the way An American Marriage did when it was selected as an Oprah selection. So I asked her now, does she still feel that way? That publishing a book doesn't change your life?
I think it can change your life, but it does not change your life as much as you think it will change your life, in that every problem you had before you published the book, you will still have. And all of the relationships and things in your life that matter, that you love, you will still have. There is, of course, a satisfaction that comes from having reached your goal. I think having a successful book like An American Marriage, when it was chosen by Oprah, I was able to feel legible to other people. Because when you write a novel, you have a lot of milestones that your average person has never heard of. You say to the average person, oh my goodness, I'm longlisted for an award from Penn. And they say, you got a long pen? Like what, huh? They don't know. But Oprah is something that people know what that is. And it is legible. And people will stop treating you like a hobbyist.
Well, she's definitely not a hobbyist anymore.
Certainly not. She's always been a professional about it.
So we've talked a lot about her creative writing. I've liked this exercise, but I want the narrative edge on this book. What gives it your recommendation?
Okay, for Kin in particular, let's start with the characters, right? Annie and Niecy, they are very clearly defined characters who have a very strong bond. They're very real to me. I wanted them throughout this book to, as they were growing up, because years passed quickly in this 300-something pages, you just want them to find a way to organize their lives so that they can be in close proximity to each other forever. I mean, there's a 2-year stretch in this book after they leave and go their separate ways where they don't speak to each other, or rather they don't speak. They speak to each other by letters, but they don't see each other. So when they finally see each other, and I'm going to paraphrase here, the description is like they hugged each other like two freezing people trying to stay warm. And it was just, that was a beautiful description that kind of encapsulates this, the way they felt about each other. I appreciate the efficiency. I mean, every other character that she brought into the story, even if it was just for a short part of the story, like there are characters who appear at the end, they've always got like, I don't want to say quirky, that because that's a little too simplistic, but they have this spark that makes them more than just a plot device ready to deliver some key information. You just like them, or you're interested in them immediately, and they are serving a plot point. So again, if she's talking about the budget of her story, right? She's being really efficient with the things that she's trying to include, which I thought is awesome. And, you know, I will say that I have not read An American Marriage, but reading this book makes me want to stay with her narrative voice a little longer. So I think I want to pick it up soon.
Well, you know, everybody has a time budget, so right. That's why we exist, to help people, you know, manage their time effectively and get great books. And it sounds like this is one of them. It's called Kin by Tayari Jones. Thanks for sharing it with us.
Happy to.